The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot of information to pack in this hour. We're going, and by the way, even though I'm fundraising on PFW, I will have an outstanding program all set for 3 o'clock that you can hear over the Progressive Radio Network. My guest in the second part of today's program will be Dr. Vince Pedre. He is going to talk about hydraulic fracking. That's the gas that is being extracted from the ground and its toxic substances and the health risks. He's a leading primary care physician in New York City. Specializing in integrative medicine. He's a graduate of Cornell University. He is a national scholar and also clinical instructor at Mount Sinai Medical Center. So we're going to talk about the dangers of all this gas drilling they're doing all over the place. A commentary from Chris Hedges from truthdig.com, March to Nowhere, that you will find interesting. Time permitting, the war addicts, the Pentagon and the military, who do almost anything to continue the never-ending war, from Tom Englehart, Tom's Dispatch, and Ayn Rand conservatism at work. Firefighters let a family's house burn down because the owner didn't pay $75 fee. Think back. Didn't I predict this? Exactly predict this? Unequivocally and specifically predict this would be happening? And you can thank Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity, and all the others out there who are such embracers of the free market. Remember I said, and what would happen if Glenn Beck, go back and listen to the archives. Glenn, your house is burning down, and the firefighters come, and they say, well, hold on, did you pay your private insurance? You say, I don't know. Well, we can't put out the fire. You can't. But my house is burning down. Well, you got to pay your fee. That's the free market system. I did about 7 different commentaries on the dangers of this, and I'm going to do in more more in depth. Also, I have not yet seen the movie. I haven't had time, and where I'm at, there's just no availability to see the Social Network film. But I certainly know enough to do a commentary about that entire mindset that permeates every level of our society of young people today. And I'll give you a different take on it. The problem and the solution of the entitled generation. Also, yesterday, Glenn Beck made a statement that to me was just mind-boggling. Justifying slavery, and that it was only a problem when the government began to get involved in the slave trade. But before that, it was no big deal, and wouldn't have become a big problem. Once again, a history lesson for Glenn Beck, who makes up his history as he goes along. And I'm going to start today's program. So you see, we have a packed show today. I'm going to start today because I'm absolutely opposed to continuing with these marches for walks for AIDS or the pink ribbons for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Now, of course, we all want to see breast cancer or AIDS eliminated, prevented. But in our society, we've got everything wrong. I mean, everything everywhere is wrong. You can't show me anything we're doing right. I defy you, and I'm going to set an hour aside for you to call in and say, this is an institution doing it all right. This will be interesting. Let me just give you an example. So we have marches for AIDS. So people go out and they march, and there are thousands that march together, and they contribute money for part of the march, and then the people get up, generally celebrities, Sharon Stone or Bono or Tom Hanks or any one of those, Elton John, who supported the effort through their celebrity status. And then you'll see people on television, scientists saying that we have some really important new drugs, we're working on new vaccines, and we just need more money. And then you'll have the protest. You have people going through Congress, generally gay activists, and representing large blocks of the gay community, who will say, we just need you not to be selfish. And then the legislators will immediately say, any amount of money you want, that's how much money you get. And then the scientists go to the feeding trough and they start to feed. What doesn't this create? Doesn't create anyone preventing AIDS, doesn't create any cures for AIDS, because it has nothing to do with AIDS. All of this has to do with being told what to believe by individuals who know very well that this single virus, if it has ever been fully identified or not, would do nothing to anyone based upon what we now know. But as long as you have one little virus that is able to destroy people so completely, but so uniquely, it will not destroy you if you're wealthy and healthy, but it will destroy you if you're poor and susceptible to disease. It's kind of a smart virus. The money is in keeping something institutionalized. So it just becomes the annual dance, the annual picnic, the annual walk. No one ever stops to say, you know something, it's like Jerry Lewis's telethons. After raising $1 billion, what do we have to show for it? And the answer is, outside of trying to help people, nobody really being helped. And the same is true for breast cancer. Look who sponsors almost all of this behind the scenes. The chemotherapy companies. The makers of tamoxifen, which actually creates a 300% increase in cancer in women of color. Look at the women rushing out now to get their mammograms, including young women, and being told, get it every year, and not looking at the evidence that this is more likely to cause cancer. The diagnosing with a mammography will cause cancer, more so than what it would prevent by detection. But we don't look at how many women are not getting cancer because we've instructed them on what really causes cancer. But it becomes an annual event. It becomes something that we don't question. The run in the park, we don't question it. We just sign up for it. So we become a society of mindlessness. We do not look at anything at the actual causative level. And that concerns me. So now I want to share with you what I consider would be far more appropriate when it comes to understanding breast cancer. And you will see none of this in the current pink everything, the NFL, all the pink shoes and pink ribbons. But that won't change a woman from getting cancer. And it won't help her if she's treated with chemotherapy, complete fraud, radiation, beneficial in some cases, but also grossly immune-suppressing, causing secondary cancers later, and surgery, when done appropriately, can save lives. While in 1950 only 1 in 20 women suffered from breast cancer, today this figure has risen to 1 in 7. Now, although the medical establishment has recommended early diagnosis via periodic breast exams, I have no problem with breast exams, but I have a lot of problems with mammography because I've done articles, research, and investigative report on mammography, just as I have on CAT scans, and I would tell you not to use them. But we're actually using more. But why don't we just talk about the actual causes? They'd like you to believe that the reason you're going to have breast cancer is because either too much sunlight, smoking, or family history. That's simply not the case. Medical evidence indicates that prolonged exposure to the female sex hormone estrogen as a result of either an early onset of menstruation or a late menopause increases the chance of breast cancer. In addition, women who have not had children or have not breastfed are at a higher risk of developing breast cancer, suggesting that female sex hormone progesterone can serve as a preventative agent. Estrogen and progesterone are usually equally balanced. But when the amount of estrogen increases or the amount of progesterone decreases, an imbalance known as estrogen dominance is created. Increased levels of estrogen are associated with higher intake of alcohol. Now, just imagine how much alcohol women drank when they were going to high school or college when I was growing up as a baby boomer. Very little. Today, binge drinking and alcohol are as common as drinking water is to people in most other parts of the world. Also, increasing levels of estrogen are associated with being overweight. We've never had this many overweight women in America's history. And then more fatty foods. Well, you get overweight by eating fatty foods. And then high-protein diets. The high-protein Atkins diet, which I consider the most unhealthy diets ever created, and all the high-protein diets, increase estrogen, which increases the risk of breast cancer. Also, the more meat that you eat, the more susceptible you are to breast cancer due to the estrogen-stimulating hormones that are frequently used to improve the texture of the meat products. Now, a diet that is high in fat has other adverse effects upon the body. One is that when a person consumes a large amount of fatty foods, the membranes of the body's cells can become damaged by the fat. After this occurs, the cell can either die or eventually be replaced by another cell, or it can attempt to repair the damage that's been done. And during that process, it's possible for the damaged cell to transform itself into a cancer cell while attempting to fix itself. Now, the liver, which is responsible for the elimination of estrogen and other hazardous materials, is often overwhelmed by the abundance of toxic substances that find their way into the human body each day. Problems with the breakdown of estrogen by the liver can also be compounded by the presence of excess amounts of sugar and alcohol. And the average woman consumes lots of sugar and alcohol, or eats a lot of meat, or is overweight, or is stressed, all of which increase your risk of cancer. And if you have all of those at the same time, you're playing Russian roulette. Now, the presence of foreign chemicals in the body known as xenoestrogens can be troublesome. While forms of xenoestrogens that are derived from plant foods are actually good for you, forms that originate from synthetic materials such as fuel, pesticides, or plastics, those have been proven to be carcinogenic. Now, another cause of breast cancer is dysfunction in the lymphatic system, which is responsible for the drainage of toxic substances from the tissues. The lymphatic system is essential to your body's immune system and aids in the removal of these xenoestrogens that can accumulate in the fatty tissue of the breast. So the flow of lymphatic fluid, which carries the body's toxins and waste products from the body's cell, is not analogous to that of blood, as it can be interrupted by muscle contraction and external force. And it's important to note that an excessive constrictive brawl can be a cause of lymphatic blockage, and that eventually can accumulate harmful materials within the breast and lead to cancer. And studies have indicated that wearing a bra for more than 12 hours a day is correlated with an increased risk of breast cancer. Therefore, I advise to limit the wearing of bras as much as possible, and be aware of bras that may constrict the flow of waste products from the breast. The absorption of excess amounts of radiation, like medical x-rays, and what will now be the x-rays in airports, can also be a factor. Years ago, doctors were ignorant of the dangers of radiation because the manifestation of harmful side effects can take decades. And consequently, the amounts of rads of radiation that patients receive was not a cause of concern, and many treatment procedures such as fluoroscopic examinations exposed people to excessive amounts of radiation dozens of times more than what they would ever get. And excessive exposure to harmful x-rays can lead to chromosomal damage, will, not can, and eventually that can lead to cancer. There was a gentleman I had on this program on many occasions. He is now deceased, Dr. John Goffman, and University of California, Berkeley. And he investigated the correlation between x-rays and breast cancer. And he asserted that 90% of all cancers of the breast can be attributed to overexposure of x-rays at any other point in a person's life. Even one x-ray, one single x-ray, at any point in your life can cause this. We now see that excess absorption of electromagnetic radiation, such as that from common household items like your television, digital clocks, microwave ovens, your computer, and cell phones, can all adversely affect melatonin in the pineal gland during the sleeping cycles. And we now know that women who have broken sleep patterns, they wake up, more frequently have cancer. Also, never use an electric blanket, ever. They really zap your body. I would also have to look at the amount of stress a person's under. So that's the bad news. But then again, you're not going to have people talking about this. Not in this pink movement. Why? Because many of the companies that create products or services that create cancer are sponsors of television programs and radio programs and magazine ads. So you're not going to touch the people that bring in the money. That's the way it works in our society. So we try to mythologize all of this. And so here's what I would do to help prevent cancer. One of the most important steps to take in preventing breast cancer is to avoid a diet that is high in animal fat, animal proteins, fried foods, caffeine, salt. Those are your soft drinks and artificial sweeteners. Go to the type of diet we talk about all the time, high in fibers. That reduces unnecessary estrogen. And while low fiber and high iron contained in beef and processed foods actually damage the cells and encourage the spread of cancer. In addition, I would go towards lima beans, soy products, tempeh, tofu. I would also look at the isoflavones and phytoestrogens and plant estrogens. The more green food you put in your body, the less likelihood of having cancer, men and women. The greens heal. They detoxify and they chelate out toxic substances. You have to curb the activity of excess estrogen in the body. And phytoestrogens from the green family and fruits and the non-soluble fibers help do this. Flaxseed, very good for you. The DHA, excellent for you. Broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, the mustard family, radishes, terrific at preventing cancer. The phytochemical isolated from the cruciferous vegetables is called indole-3-carbon, or I3C. That helps turn the strong estrogen, estradiol, which could trigger cancer cells formation, into the weak estrogen, estriol. It also elevates the level of 2-hydroxyestrione, another metabolite of estrogen, and inhibits the formation of the 16. Just remember, 16 is bad. That's from meat and plants, meat and dairy. 16, hydroestrogen, and versus the good 2-hydroxyestrogen, estrione. And that's from the vegetables. So the more juices, wheatgrass juice, green juices, the more vegetables, the lower the 16, which is what you want, and the more the 2. And so remember, you want an elevation of the 2-hydroxyestrione. You want a reduction in the 16-A-hydroxyestrione, which could be dangerous and sends growth signals to the breast cancer cells. Indole-3-carbinol also is capable of blocking the development of cancer cells and stimulates them to kill themselves. And the indole-3-carbinol is also a free radical inhibitor, and it works really well in the body, generally about 400 milligrams a day. And then curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, that's an extract from the spice turmeric. And that's a powerful agent in fighting cancer. And it confuses the growth signals in cancer cells and inhibits the development of new blood vessels into the tumor, which is known as angiogenesis. And supplementation of about 400-900 milligram capsules 3 times a day will make an enormous difference. Another great anti-angiogenesis agent is green tea. It affects the cancer. It helps eliminate it because of the chemicals in it. And green tea is established as a preventer of cancer, and it's just terrific. And I would suggest maybe 2,000 milligrams. I would also suggest conjugated linoleic acid at about 3,000 milligrams a day, vitamin D3 at about 5,000 units a day, coenzyme Q10 at about 1,000 milligrams a day, vitamin C up to 10,000 milligrams in buffered form, selenium at 200 micrograms, SAMe at 500 milligrams twice a day, alpha-lipoic acid 1,000 milligrams a day, and borage, primrose, and black currant seed oil at 1,000 milligrams a day. And then the herbs, which are extremely important, like the Venus flytrap, has become quite popular in Europe. And on this side, I would use herbs like essiac, combination of herbs that has shown very powerful. Cat's claw, which is a Peruvian herb, is known to combat cancer. And detoxification, that's crucial. And then psychoneuroimmunology, building up the person's mental mind state so that they believe that they're going to live. Those are the things I would do, none of which are you hearing about. And unfortunately, now it's all about preventative chemotherapy. And that's what they want to do. They want to get you into a mindset where you're actually going to be making yourself susceptible to take their chemotherapy. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. This is the one radio show in the world that will not take sides on political issues, but rather look for the truth. And today, I want to give a shout out to all of the fans of Glenn Beck. I don't want to see him censored. I believe in freedom of speech and freedom of choice of ideas. But when someone is so egregious in their statements, I believe they should be held accountable. Yesterday, he made a statement that was just mind-numbingly stupid, where he said that it was slavery was really only a problem because the government had taken control over it. To Glenn Beck's audience and to Glenn Beck, the early American slaveholders were the oligarchical elite of their day. They would be equivalent to Lloyd Blankstein of Goldman Sachs, Larry Summers, our Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Kissinger, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies. In other words, they were the ones that ran the economy, the food, the flow of money. 18th century, the colonial courts racialized slavery, thus creating a caste system, similar to India. Those who have freedom to move in society and those who are known as shudras, or untouchables, destined to do the worst tasks and jobs in society. From 16th to the 19th century, almost 12 million Africans were shipped to the Americas, about 750,000 to the United States. But by 1860, the slave population in the United States was at 4 million human beings. First slaves in America were in the Spanish colony of San Miguel de Guadalupe in South Carolina. Yes, there were groups known as white slaves too, or indentured servants, who were poor Irish, Scottish, English, and Germans. In the 1800s, they were bred to become a self-replicating labor force, like selecting the strongest bull in a herd. This is a quote by a slave owner was held as the creed of the day. Quote, now I speak what I know, when I say it like it is, casting pearls before swine, a biblical reference to try to persuade a Negro to work. He must be made to work and should always be given to understand that if he fails to perform his duty, he will be punished for it, unquote. The 13th Amendment in the Constitution is the legal source of outlawing slavery. Award-winning scholar David Bryan Davis, writing about slavery, identified the plantation system as welfare capitalism. So, Glenn Beck, everything you said was wrong. Your ignorance of history, making things up, wanting to have people believe that the unions, anyone who is compassionate, anyone who is humanistic or has spiritual values, is a socialist, Marxist, communist, and should be eliminated. Your support of Joseph McCarthy and your breeding of a new kind of hysteria, of hate, is reprehensible. Sir, come on my program and debate me instead of the buffoons that you have on yours. You have an open invitation. And I would be grossly offended if I were any African American to listen to your program after what you said yesterday in defense of slavery. There is no defense of slavery. And that's why, even when I did a commentary on Thomas Jefferson, I said he was a grossly flawed person. So when you brag about the founding father of our Constitution, did you forget that it was George Washington who signed a law allowing any slave that ran away and tried to find his freedom to be returned as property? Yes, he also was grossly flawed. In fact, all of our founding fathers were grossly flawed. And if these are the people whose ideals you'd say that we should emulate today. One other comment before we go on. I was able to watch some of the One Nation March. I was offended by it. Not because they chose to go out and march, but what it did not say and what was not seen. We can hold one march, a One Nation marches every week. It will not make any difference until we revolt against the formal structures of power. The liberal preoccupation with positive forms of propaganda ignores the root of our problem. The Tea Party and hate mongers on Fox, such as Glenn Beck, however repugnant, are the manifestation of the crisis, not its cause. The problem on the left with Democrats marching rank and file, just like lemmings, with a certain intellectual conceit that somehow they are right in all things, miss the point. Don't make Glenn Beck or Fox or Sean Hannity the problem. They are merely its messengers. They are not its cause. The forces assaulting the remnants of American democracy will not be cowed or discredited with rallies, such as the one in Washington on Saturday. We will blunt these rising anti-democratic forces only when we organize outside conventional systems of power. It means dismantling the permanent war economy and the corporate state. It means an end to foreclosures and bank repossessions. It means a functional health care system for all Americans. It means taking care of our poor and unemployed. And it means a system of government that is freed from corporate interest. Mass support for anti-democratic movements and public acceptance of open violations of human rights are not caused in the end by the skillful dissemination of misinformation or brainwashing. They are caused by the breakdown of a society and the death of a liberal class that once made reform and representative government possible. The timidity of our liberal class today is appalling, but it was on public display during the march in Washington. Speakers may have called for jobs, but none would call on citizens to abandon the rotting hull of the Democratic Party and our moribund political system or put Wall Street speculators in prison. The speakers at the rally proposed working within the current electoral system. That is wrong. Bill Maher is wrong. They are all wrong. Understand what I'm saying. Although most Americans are aware that it has been gamed by corporate interest, this is hardly a call, especially given the failures of the Obama administration that will fire up the unemployed and underemployed. Who was it there? Reverend Al Sharpton, who says, we need jobs, that we bailed out the banks, we bailed out the insurance companies. Now it's time to bail out American people. But Sharpton and the other speakers, too close to the power elite in the Democratic Party, did not call for rebellion. There was no war cry against Wall Street and the purveyors of death in the defense and health industry. There was no acknowledgement that unfettered capitalism and globalization are killing our ecosystems and creating a worldwide system of neo-feudalism. There was no acceptance that the corporate state must be dismantled if we are to save ourselves. Any effective resistance must begin with a condemnation of our political elite and liberal institutions, including the press, the universities, labor, the arts, religious institutions, and the Democratic Party for selling us out. Al Sharpton, shame on you and all the rest of you. I did not hear you condemning Bill Clinton. No, you didn't. The man who was responsible for allowing, without interference, the genocide in Rwanda and the evisceration of the unions in the United States, the offshoring of the jobs. Blame it on Bush? No, it happened under Reagan and was institutionalized under the Democrats. But the speakers on the Mall in Washington would not go there. And I suspect for this reason, the Americans who are hurting most found nothing they said of interest. All totalitarian movements, even those that are openly criminal, succeed because they have widespread mass support. They are the expressions of a yearning that sweeps through a nation that has been convulsed by economic dislocation, a loss of hope, and flagrant political corruption. And in these times of lament and deprivation, the absurdities, crimes, and excesses of reactionary forces do not matter. It wasn't hard to find out what Slobodan Milosevic was doing in Bosnia. It wasn't hard in Nazi Germany to hear about the widespread massacres of Jews in Poland. It's not a secret to most Americans that Muslim detainees held for years without charges are tortured in black sites around the world. The murder of tens of thousands of civilians by our forces in Iraq, Afghanistan, open-air prison in the Gaza Strip is not a mystery. We know what happens to the millions of undocumented workers who live in as stateless citizens among us and have become a modern-day slave labor force. The rising proto-fascist movement in America is caused by a hatred and alienation so profound that the crimes of the state, along with the buffoonish antics of those who defend and champion these crimes, do not matter. We will not discredit the right wing with facts, a demand for respect of law and order and rational discussion. Propaganda or countermeasures, messages of tolerance are not the issue. The issue is societal collapse. This issue is a corporate state that has carried out a coup d'etat. The issue is the rupture of all mechanisms within the political process to protect citizens from accelerating impoverishment and internal control and corporate abuse. Those who refuse to acknowledge this bleak reality, you, my friend, will suffer because of it. The right-wing propagandists have not created the problem. They have tapped into the moral void that has left millions, tens of millions of Americans yearning for a profound and radical change. And if torture, war, racist attacks on immigrants, gays, and Muslims, along with increased repression against internal dissent, is the price for moral and economic renewal, many Americans are ready to sign on. If those who lead this rising proto-fascist movement insist on a Christian nation, teach creationism, and believe in the physical existence of Satan, many Americans will sign on for this too. Hatred, when mobilized, is a very effective political force, and hatred, including the hatred for a liberal class that abandoned the working class, is what we face. The decimation of our working class through outsourcing and globalization dynamited two of the most important props of the democratic system, class consciousness and class conflict. This has left traditional political parties, which once represented differing class interests, with nothing to offer the public beyond fringe issues such as abortion and gay marriage. Those in the liberal class who cling to the corpse of the Democratic Party do so not because they believe in the policies of the party. It does not differ in any significant way from the Republican Party, but because they hope against hope that the party will somehow restore itself to the former position as a defender of liberal values and the working class interests. It is the politics of nostalgia. Our political theater has orphaned citizens who once looked into political parties to express and defend their interests. It has engendered apathy towards traditional social and political structures and incoherent rage. This mixture of apathy and rage is a volatile cocktail. It finds its expression outside of normal systems of dissent and in leaders who, in times of prosperity and stability, would be dismissed as lunatics. No rally, no positive message, no effort to expose the idiocies of those arrayed against us will work until we restore to the political process mechanisms by which ordinary citizens can be heard. Hannah Arendt, in The Origins of Totalitarianism, cites the collapse of traditional political mechanisms which now plague us as the opening needed for all totalitarian movements. Quote, the fall of protecting class walls transformed the slumbering majorities behind all parties into one great unorganized structureless mass of furious individuals who had nothing in common except their vague appreciation or apprehension that the hopes of party members were doomed, that consequently the most respected, articulate, and representative members of the community were fools, and that all the powers that be were not so much evil as they were equally stupid and fraudulent. In conclusion, the One Nation March in Washington, which lacked moral and political courage, did nothing to educate or rally our most important constituency, those out of work, those being foreclosed, those without hope. It refused to confront the real corporate structures of power. It refused to disown Barack Obama, the fraud that he is, and the Democrats. And in the end, it only confirmed what those who hate us think of liberals. Why didn't the tens of thousands or 100,000, however many there were, why didn't you march to the White House and say, President Obama, do at least one honest thing in your tenure here, sign an executive order to stop home foreclosures, sign an executive order making it illegal to trade in commodities essential to life? No, that would be expecting too much. I'm Gary Knoll and Chris Hedges, back in a moment. Our day is not here. It will not be here for the next 4 years. You will have to continue to bear with us and look at the absurdity of the Democrats and the Republicans, each thinking they know what is best. They are both clueless. They have failed us equally. They are both warmongers. They both are corporatists. Look at the top Democrats. Look at the liberals that support those Democrats. Look at the institutions that support them. Look at the Cato Institute or the Free Enterprise Institute. Look at all the think tanks, liberal or conservative. They're all controlled and owned by the oligarch, the elite. My God, do they think we're all idiots? And yet, because of their promises, people are so frustrated they're willing to listen to these people and bring these people into office. We need one whole cycle where it gets a lot worse to show the complete bankruptcy of both systems before a truly independent group will emerge, and then normal average people will take back the power and virtually deconstruct everything that they have put in place. The welfare state for corporate America, the largest single giveaway and the largest single form of corporate socialism that they don't talk about. If we did what was right, we wouldn't have unemployment, we wouldn't have homelessness, we wouldn't have poverty, we wouldn't have suffering, and we wouldn't have a contaminated environment. Neither party is capable of addressing any issue on any level, nor the media supporting them. I'm Gary Knoll. We are going to first go to our guest because he is standing by. Then we'll come back in studio and say hello to Kara. My guest, who I introduced earlier in the program, is here to talk about something that the average American is unaware of. and that is the hydraulic fracking and the toxic substances and the health risks that permeate when you're drilling for gas. We've been led to believe that this is non-toxic. No problem. Not going to contaminate our water or air or soil. And it's a good way for people to make some extra income. Well, let's hear what my guest has to say about this. He is Dr. Vince. Do you pronounce your name Pedre?
Pedre, yes.
Pedre. He is a leading primary care physician in New York City, specializing in integrative and holistic medicine. He's a graduate of Cornell University. He's a national scholar, clinical instructor at Mount Sinai Medical Center, and following 9/11, investigating the aftermath of toxic environmental pollution, and he focuses now on building the immune system. He is also the author of a short integrative medical book, The Swine Flu Survival Guide, and he's with us now. Please take our audience on this journey to explain why we should be concerned about the gas companies using the pristine Hudson Valley with gas and the fracking of that gas and the size of the Marcellus Shale natural gas reserves and what this could do to the persons listening now.
Well, let me start by saying I'm speaking on behalf of NYH2O.org and DamascusCitizens.org. And the way I got involved with this is because I actually own a small farmhouse with land in northeast Pennsylvania, about 5 miles from the Delaware River, which is right on, it's like ground zero for the Marcellus Shale. And little did I know when I was buying in that region, thinking that I was escaping the city and getting out into the country, that I was going to land in the middle of all of this. The Marcellus Shale is this big rock formation about, it varies from 1,000 feet to 5,000 feet, 7,000 feet below the surface, that contains natural gas in little bubbles. And a good analogy that I heard was a commentator on the Huffington Post. It's basically like petrified champagne. The natural gas is contained in it in very tiny little bubbles. So the only way to release it is using this technology of hydraulic fracturing, but with a new technique that was not available before. Previously, what they did, they drilled wells vertically, and that's how they got the natural gas. But they figured out if they could drill vertically and then change the direction of the bore and go horizontally into the shale, then using this process that's called hydraulic fracturing, where they use millions of gallons of water combined with their, you know, about 100,000 gallons of their proprietary chemicals, which they do not have to reveal because of an exemption that these companies have passed in an energy bill in 2005 by our Congress. So since 2005, it's no surprise that there's been this rush across the country to develop more and more of these gas fields. Now, ahead of the East is Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico. They've been doing this out there for a long time. Texas also, the Barnett Shale. So we have experience from the experience from what has happened out West to see what is going on in these areas. And we see things coming up in people's wells and the aquifers. Things like plasticizers, you know, something that we use to make plastic, but you don't really want to drink this stuff. Or benzene, toluene, ethyl benzene, you know, these things that you don't really hear too much about, but they're very concerning because what happens is they say this process is safe, that it's not going to cause any problems. But there's so many aspects to the chain of events that occur to create this process that could not only be toxic to the environment, but in such a pristine area as the Delaware River Basin, northeast Pennsylvania, into the Catskills, the Hudson River Valley, we're talking about a lot of farmland and a lot of water that is the drinking supply for 19 million people, including us here in New York City, New Jersey, Philadelphia. So if we contaminate our water with these chemicals, there is no way to filter them out. Right now, New York City and our region have one of five federal exemptions from having to filter their water. It does get treated with chlorine and whatnot, but the water does not have to go through a filtration plant because it comes down so clean from the Catskills, from the Delaware, Upper Delaware River, that you do not have to clean this water. It is already clean by nature. So we are really messing with our life support system. So these chemicals that they use, some of the symptoms that people experience immediately, and we're seeing this in Dimmock, Pennsylvania, where people actually just recently, the PA Department of Environmental Protection has admitted that the company there, Cabot, has contaminated the water wells for at least 18 or 19 families. And people experience eye irritation, skin sensitivity. You might just feel like your stomach is upset one day and you vomit. The incidence of asthma goes up. You start getting neurological symptoms because, see, these chemicals, some of them are what we call volatile. So they're vaporized. And then you inhale them. And once you inhale them, they go into your circulation. They can go anywhere where they're going to have their effect. They cause dizziness. They can cause syncope, which is loss of consciousness. You just drop to the floor. Tremors, tingling in your fingers, severe pains in your arms and legs that just travel around, and you can't really know what the cause is. And interestingly, these are some of the symptoms that people are reporting who have been exposed to what's going on in the Gulf and this foamer or surfactant that they put into the water. That's one of the chemicals that they use for hydraulic fracturing. If you see, they use these code names like foamer. That's not a chemical. That's just a name for something. But they don't have to reveal what these chemicals are because they are, quote-unquote, proprietary. And because of the Energy Bill of 2005, they are exempt from the reporting requirements of the Safe Drinking Water Act and the Clean Air Act. And they have an exemption from the Superfund Bill. So basically, these companies have been given carte blanche. They're arguing that the states have enough power to regulate them, that they do not need to be regulated by the federal government, the EPA, but it's not true. The states are understaffed. They're under budgeted. There's no way that the states can keep up with all of this. We really need the EPA to step in and regulate these companies. The other problems that occur here when we're talking about health effects, the trucks that come in to build the well, build the drill bit, and take out all this water that will be produced, because where does these millions of gallons of water that are injected underground with these gallons of chemicals, a lot of which have been identified through the research of Theo Colburn in Colorado and found to be toxic to humans, this stuff actually comes back up. The majority of it will come back up, and they need to get rid of it. Well, where do they put it? They might put it in an open waste pit next to the gas well, or they truck it away. And the question is, well, what are they doing with it? Are they injecting it back underground? There's a lot of stuff they don't need to report. But with the diesel truck traffic, you get the formation of ozone when the diesel fumes, which have nitrous oxide, react with all the chemicals that are actually in the shale that have been dormant there and should probably not be disturbed, which include the benzene that I mentioned, ethyl benzene, toluene, 2-butoxyethanol, xylene, polyaromatic hydrocarbons, and trace heavy metals, butoxyethanol, all these chemicals which are neurotoxins. They short-circuit our body enzymes. Well, they also happen to react with the nitric oxide from diesel fuel and form ozone. You get ground-level ozone being formed, which can spread from one well site up to 200 miles. So you're going to have rural areas that have smog, like Los Angeles or any of the other cities in the U.S. that suffer from this problem. It's ludicrous to think that they're going to do this without any regulation. whatsoever.
Hmm. I appreciate you coming on and sharing this with us. Give us a contact and information point for people to reach out to.
There are several websites. I think a great one to look at is GaslandTheMovie.com. Gasland is a movie that was basically a documentary by Josh Fox that documents his perspective on this. And I think it's done sort of like in an inquisitive fashion.
Right. He's going to be a guest on the air, so we'll talk with him about that.
Great. But anyway, his website has a lot of resources to help people
What is
learn
his
about
website
this.
Again, please?
GaslandTheMovie.com.
Okay.
So you can contact your congressperson, write letters.
We're going to be doing a call to action site specifically on this, and I look forward. Give us your contact information personally, please.
You can reach me at my website, pedremd.com.
P-E-D-R-E.
MD.com or through my blog, which is pedremd.wordpress.com.
Okay, I look forward to our next conversation. Thank you very much for bringing this Newsmaker update.
Thank you for sharing this with your listeners. Very important.
Dr. Vincent Pedre, my guest, hydraulic fracking, the issue. It's our Newsmaker of the Day. On with the show, I still have a commentary to do on four energy technologies that could replace oil and coal. Very good news, and that'll be in after we go off WMIE, which we'll be doing in 2 minutes. One real quick thing. I came up with an idea this morning to help a lot of people in this audience. As many of you know, I've created, invented two new products. New and improved green stuff. 10,000 ORAC, that's antioxidants, and new and improved greens and grains, the best smelling and tasting thing ever, by the way. It's how I blended pineapple and cherry. Anyhow, between the two of them, you're getting all of the greens that I know of in quantities that make a difference, that really help. Chlorella, spinach, spirulina, celery, cauliflower, cabbage, broccoli, oat, beta-glucan, kale, asparagus, parsley, radish, broccoli, sprouts, onion, collard greens, and arugula. That's in the green stuff, but nothing duplicating it in greens and grains, and including the sprouted quinoa, sprouted kamut, sprouted amaranth, sprouted sprout, spelt. And because they're all sprouted, there's no gluten, plus green kamut and pumpkin and alfalfa and oat grass and flaxseed powder, and yucca, fennel, ginseng, chia seed, bromelain, 6 types of sea vegetables, ginger root, and 8 billion positive bacteria. So here's the deal. Today, I'm going to give you both of these brand new products, plus a choice of video, any one of 5 videos, new videos we have, for $99. All this goes to this non-commercial radio station. That's a $70 saving. I don't care how you cut it. That's about a 70% discount today only. It's only for today. So you want the new and improved green stuff, the new and improved greens and grains. You're getting over 35 different things plus the high ORAC protective antioxidants. You're getting the high probiotic beneficial bacteria. You're getting all this organic stuff. It's kosher. It's raw. It's phenomenal. And you put a tablespoon of each of these in your juice in the morning. That's what I do. Call now, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. This special, both of them together, plus a video of your choice for only $99. And that is the best deal of the year. This is for 24 hours. Green stuff and greens and grains, the new and improved. And we have 191 bottles. That's it. And then it'll be 4 weeks before we get it back in again. Call now, 877-627-5065. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. And in our final segment here, and by the way, we got a lot coming this afternoon. I want to share something from Jim Montevalli. From the Daily Green, new large-scale projects that we really need are revolutionizing the energy sector, using sunlight, wind, waves, even trash, rather than oil, coal, or nuclear power. As you know, President Obama has been saying he wants to support more natural non-polluting therapies, and yet all the money that they give, all the big money, the billions of dollars go to nuclear, terrible, oil, disastrous, and gas, no good, and coal. So saying one thing and doing another. Well, every time there's an energy-related disaster, it boosts the prospects of clean alternatives. The devastating explosion at the Upper Big Branch coal mine killed 29 people and got people wondering if all that ancient coal shouldn't just be left in the ground. And the oil spill from the Deep Horizon rig in the Gulf of Mexico led to new restrictions on offshore drilling and rising public sentiment for cleaner alternatives. The problem is that people's memories are short, and the old arguments coal is native energy, offshore oil offsets foreign imports, reassert themselves to reinforce the status quo. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar's approval of the Cape Wind project in Massachusetts could spur development of the dozen other offshore projects pending in the U.S. and indeed also jumpstart other stalled energy projects. So what I want to do is take you on some of these, like fresh wind. Google Maps maintains an interactive map of the status of some of America's pending offshore wind projects. The developing trend is for turbine farms to be located much further out to sea than Cape Cod, which is 5 miles offshore. And there are projects moving forward off the coast of Rhode Island, which is with 100 turbines and 400 megawatts, New Jersey, Delaware, and New York City. Con Ed and Long Island Power Authority, along with others, are going to be giving us a total of 2,500 megawatts. And the New Jersey project would be 16 to 20 miles offshore, and the Delaware about 11 miles. So this is all good, the offshore wind projects. Then we have solar. And solar is going to be in all sizes. And from the tiny little cell powering your calculator to large utility scale projects. And many of the biggest projects are either in Europe or involve European companies. For example, Abegona Solar announced this week that it had started commercial operation near Seville, Spain, of its 50 megawatt solar plant, which uses parabolic trough solar technology. The plant can power 25,000 homes and or offset 31,000 tons of carbon dioxide. And they're also moving ahead with two large concentrated solar plants in the United States, including Solona in the desert outside Phoenix and the Mojave Desert in California. Another Mojave project backed by the British source and $160 million investment got a big boost in February when it received a conditional $1.4 billion loan guarantee from the Department of Energy. U.S. solar electric capacity is still relatively small, just about 2,000 megawatts, enough to power about 350,000 homes. But revenue climbed 36%, and last year, $1.4 billion in venture capital reached solar companies in the United States. It's still tiny, but I believe that we should be putting a lot of resource money behind this. And then we have the new wave. I'll bet you haven't heard about this. Wave energy is still technology awaiting widespread commercialization, though costs are coming down rapidly. According to a Federal Department of Interior study, results from the first commercial-scale projects that capture electricity from the relentless movements of the ocean are very encouraging. The report said that early facilities in California, Hawaii, Oregon, and Massachusetts were able to generate electricity at 9 to 11 cents per kilowatt hour. The report estimated that the total wave potential from U.S. coastlines to a depth of about 60 meters is about 2,100 terawatt hours annually. The biggest problem is cost. These facilities are very capital intensive, ranging from about $4,000 to $15,000 per kilowatt. But there's significant breakthroughs, and capital costs would be needed to make this technology cost competitive. But again, we're looking at the ocean. It's an ocean-based system, and it's very important. It's called the new wave. And then we have talking trash. traditional trashed energy plants have a bad name in the United States, mainly because they simply burn garbage and emit lots of chemicals out of their smokestacks. But a new type of plant that turns trash to electricity and heat is catching on in Europe, and its key feature is filters that capture mercury, dioxin, and other toxins before they're emitted. So according to the latest on this, there are 29 clean trash to energy plants. There are 400 in Europe. Germany and Holland are the leaders. And their use has not only reduced Denmark's energy costs and reliance on oil and gas, but benefited the environment, diminishing the use of landfills and cutting carbon dioxide emissions. Unlike Europe, the United States has plenty of low-cost landfill space, and that combines with the low public opinion of the older technology to create a barrier. So ours is a mindset. But think about this. Wouldn't it be great if we were able to use this new technology? We could then start to go out into the ocean and reclaim massive amounts by building a virtual floating plant in the Pacific that could just move through the world's largest mass of plastic. It's about three times the size of Texas, and just put these barges out there, gigantic barges that would move through and recycle all this plastic. That's the future. So that's good. Jason Schiff is the guest at 3 o'clock on Progressive Radio Network. I want to thank you all for taking your time. And right now we're going over to our next show live here at the Progressive Radio Network, where you can hear the Animal Magnet Pet Radio with Deborah Wolf. Have a nice day. See you in 2 hours.
Is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.